morning. The Mechaber in Sif Chof Aleph Paskins, Yoizif Kuf B'Kuf Chof, Meikara Kuf B'Danka, B'Tsaif Kuf Chof, Asr Midaraisa. If a person borrows 100 bushels of wheat or whatever, any type of merchandise, he borrows 100, he commits to paying back 120. But what happens is that when he what happens is that over time the value of these payros drops. So when he pays back the 120, its value is the same as the 100 bushels that he originally borrowed. So he borrowed 100, he's paying back 120, but the value of what he's paying is the same as what he borrowed. So over there, the Mechaber paskins that nevertheless it's going to be aser. We go basar meikara. Since originally the deal was I borrowed 100, I'm paying back 120, we don't look at the value. We look at the actual arrangement at the time of the loan, and that will be asar midaraisa. In the flip case as well, the oizef kuf b'meya. What if you borrow 100 bushels of apple, of wheat, you agree to pay back the 100 bushels, but then over time when you pay back, it comes out that the price appreciated, and therefore while the quantity is the same, the value that you're giving at the end is greater than what you actually received. So over here, midoraisa, it should be mutter. Because again, midoraisa, we are consistent. We look at the time of the loan. You borrowed 100, you committed to pay back 100. Midoraisa, that will be mutter. But nevertheless, asa midorabanon. This is the halacha of sa b'sa, that midorabanon, because you're getting back more value, it looks like ribis, it's going to be asr. And in a future shiur, we'll discuss exactly when it is asur and the exceptions. But essentially, when it comes to hilchos ribis, if you borrow 100 and you agree to pay back more, it will be asur regardless. If you agree to pay back the same amount, but the price appreciates, there's an issur d'rabbanon that will apply in certain cases. Now, this is all when you're borrowing merchandise. 100 barrels of oil, bushels of wheat, you're paying back 100. So if the price goes up in between, there's an issur midrabanan. When it comes to currency, if you borrow $100, you borrowed it back in the 30s, you took a long time to repay, and now you're ready to pay it back now. Regardless of how the value of the dollar changed, whether it was an inflation, whether there was deflation, it doesn't make a difference. When it comes to currency, you borrow $100, you have to pay back $100. If you give back $101, even though it buys a lot less today than it does when you actually borrow the money, still in halacha, currency is considered static. If there's inflation, in halacha we look at it as if the price of everything went up. We don't look at the value of the dollar going down. And therefore, if you borrowed $100, you have to pay back $100. Paying back more, regardless of the index or the consumer price index, regardless if you're paying back more than the amount that you borrowed, that will always be awesome.
Can you get back into the currency?
So, like this. This halacha, that currencies don't change, what does that mean? You have a dollar, you have the euro. There's constant fluctuation between the two. So the halacha is that in any given country, the currency, the primary currency of that location has halacha of tiva, and that does not change in this location. This same dollar, which in America would be considered currency, if you go to a foreign country where they don't trade in dollars, there the dollar will be the same thing as a bushel of wheat. It's a product, it's something which is, it's not currency, it's not used, it's not legal tender in that country, and therefore that would be treated as payros. So this concept that we say that a currency doesn't change in value is only in the place where it is the primary currency. Dollar, obviously, for America. There was a time where in Eretz Yisrael, many places considered the dollar also as a primary currency. Because there was a time way back where the shekel was, or the lira was constantly dropping. And people priced things in dollars, and large purchases were often done in dollars. So in such a case, even though it wasn't the legal currency, it was the de facto, it was what people used, that had the halacha of currency, and that was considered to be the static. Today, I think it's very different. Today, the shekel is a lot more stable than the dollar, and certainly pricing in Eretz Yisrael is done in the shekelim, and that would be the currency. Excuse me? Very good, very good. So the Chazon Ish points out that this halacha that we find in the Gemara, that the currency doesn't change in value, it's always said in the context of they had gold currencies, they had silver currencies, it had intrinsic value. So there clearly, if you have a gold coin and that is the primary currency, that doesn't change. The Gemara discusses if you have gold coin and silver coins and copper coins, which is the ikker, and the Gemara ends up saying silver is the ikker. But that's a discussion in Hazav. What happens today when when the currency is not backed by anything? So the Chazon Ish in Siman Ayin Bay, in Yerodeah, Siman Ayin Bay's, we had in the Maram Kaim Sivav, but it talks about it more at the end, Siv Zayin Ches and Tes. The Chazon Ish says very clearly it doesn't make a difference. Even though the currency is not, it doesn't have any intrinsic value, it's not pegged to the gold, it's not backed by any gold in the Federal Reserve anymore, still, the bottom line is it's currency, and therefore we look at it as a static, as a value that does not change. And therefore, even though there is inflation, even though the dollar drops and everything goes up proportionally because of that, still in halacha, we'll look at the dollar as staying the same. The Igros Moshe has a famous tshuva in Chelik Be, in Yerodeah Bey, Simen Kuf Tezvav. It's actually discussed in Hilchos Maaser Kesafim. A person bought a house 30 years ago for $100,000. He sells it 30 years later for $200,000. But the reason why he sold it for more was there was inflation over time. And the $200,000 today buys exactly what the $100,000 would have bought 30 years ago. So his question is, do you give Meiser on this $100,000 of capital gains? So the Igros Moshe starts off by saying that if it was a regular currency, so we just said the halacha is currencies we assume do not change in value. So if you made $100,000, you should have to give Meiser. And the same thing in Hilchos Ribbis. But then he says that's all when currency had intrinsic value. Today, where there's paper money, he says he's not so sure. Because paper money, he has two ways of understanding. He said one way of understanding is the reason why it has value is because the government will give you gold or silver or something if you ask for it. He says if that's the case, if the value drops because people have less confidence in the government's ability to pay up their debts or to redeem the dollars, he said that would be considered a drop in value. It would not be like currency. And in that case, we'd like Paris and Hilchos Ribbis, you know, you'd be able to give back more dollars if the value dropped. Then he says, perhaps that's not the pshat. Perhaps once people accept it as currency, the government says you can use it to pay your taxes. It's legal tender. That itself is enough to give it a status of currency. Rav Moshe seems to go with the first approach. That currency today, because it's not backed by anything, does not have this halacha, and therefore if you would follow this, if you borrowed $100 and there was inflation, there'll be no issur to pay back $120. No, so by Meiser he ends up saying it doesn't make a difference. Either way he says you would not have to give Meiser on this extra money. He says Meiser is on profit. And for this is, while we have a technical halacha discussion, Hilchos Ribbis, how to look at currency, no one in his right mind is going to say you are richer or you've made a profit just because of inflation. So in Hilchos Maaser Kesafim, he says, you certainly do not have to give Maaser off the increase in value that's directly based on inflation. In Hilchos Ribbis, he seems to say that Shemi Mutter, to give more. He then says, Al Stino D'Malchus Adino, because the government says, if you borrowed $100 30 years ago, the $100 today is legal tender to pay off that debt, he says in Hilchos Ribbis, if you give more, it would be Aser. Regardless, I think it's very difficult to be samech on this tshuva, because this tshuva was written in 1970. The United States went off the silver standard approximately 1963. The dollars were redeemable. You were still able to redeem old notes until 1968. At that point, people looked at dollars as a way, there was an assumption the government would back it. The currency said, we'll pay beer upon demand until 1963. So at that period, even though they were changing over, people still looked at dollars as something that the government stood behind and would, when push comes to shove, give you gold or silver or something in exchange for it. There you can have that shaila. Today, where it's clearly not backed by anything, no one expects to get any gold or silver. It's just valued because it's legal tender. I think everyone would agree to the Chazon Ish that a dollar has a din of currency, and you wouldn't be able to give anything more. Now the Gros Moshe in the Nuchev that just came out, in Chelek Tes, Simon Chav Aleph, has such a case. Someone sent him a check for $100 along with a note that his father had borrowed 25 rubles from Rav Moshe back in Russia some 50 years ago. And he's paying him back. And it was a $100 check was enclosed. So Rav Moshe writes back that he's not sure if he can accept it, because $100 might be more than 25 rubles are worth. So in that case, we have a problem of ribbis. You borrow 25 rubles, you're paying back $100, so perhaps that would be awesome. So Rav Moshe ultimately is matter for two reasons. The first reason, as he says, is that the reason why your father waited 50 years to pay me back is that he understood I was meichlid a very long time ago. Now, if someone gives you a present, you make a bar mitzvah, someone gives you a nice, generous present. A few years later, they make a simcha, you want to give back a bigger present. Is that aser? Is that ribbis? No. Ribbis is, I owe you money, and now I'm paying you back, and I'm paying you back extra. In this case, where it was clear that it was, even though it started off as a loan, it was written off, it was given as a present many years ago. If now, as Akaras HaTov, you want to give back a larger present, Rav Moshe says that would not be aser. Okay, so good. I'll get to that in a minute. Then Rav Moshe says another very nice story. He says that the loan was done, let's assume it's a loan, but it was 25 rubles. These rubles were issued by the Tsar. That doesn't have much value today. It's not a currency. So Zakr of Moshe, when values go up or down, that we have our discussion. Inflation, deflation, you ignore that, you borrowed $100, you pay back $100. But if a country goes out of business, the currency is no longer valid because the malchus is not around and it's not legal tender anymore. There he says you have to peg it to what its value was in gold back then. He says you'd have to go back and figure out how much gold, 25 rubles, was worth at that time. And he says it's very likely today that its value is at least $100. It's interesting, Rav Moshe seems like misafik, he was willing to be makel. Doesn't seem like he knew either way. But he ends off the tshuva asking the person to tell him what exactly his father had told him. Did your father say, I owe $100 and therefore I want to pay it back? Then he has a problem of ribbis. Or was it because he was nice enough to lend it to me or to be meichelet, I want to have a karas hatov, I want to send him a check in return. And then he asked him to find out when his father, before he died, when he told him to repay it, did he tell him I'm repaying it because that's its value? Or he asked the person to tell him exactly what happened so he can figure out which of the two heterim would apply. And interesting, he actually ends off that I don't want to be machmir over here, even though in Hilchos Ribbis, people are often machmir, because your father, before he died, told you to give the $100 to me. If I'm going to be machmir in Hilchos Ribbis, then I'm going to be mekel in mitzvah kaim de remes. Your father gave you instructions before he died. You have a mitzvah to listen to that. And therefore, if it's aser, it's aser. But if it's not aser, then it's not good to be machmer. And that's why he asked him to write back exactly what happened, what the story was, so he can figure out what to do.
You take into consideration that even though it's not removals and not currency, theoretically, with that removal, you probably get a lot of money from the desire.
No, because it's not. We're dealing with what you owe the person is the currency. If the currency is no longer a valid currency, the same way you can't force him to accept it simply because it's a collector's item, he can't force you to pay it. It's, you know, you borrow money, you have to pay back money. Okay, so now let's move on to the next halacha. The Gemara in Bava Metzia Daf Ayin talks about Moyes Yisayman. What did you borrow? You borrowed euros? Again, when you borrow dollars, your obligation is to pay back dollars. The lender certainly doesn't have to accept euros. If he wants to accept euros and he wants to accept the amount of euros that today are worth $100, that's fine. If you're giving him merchandise that's worth more than $100, that's going to be ribbis. Now, if you borrow euros and you pay back euros, that is sa b'sa, because it's like borrowing merchandise. If the value of the euro went up in between, you will very often have a problem, but that's sa b'sa, which we'll have to discuss up. It's exactly. In Europe, it would be considered currency. In the United States, euros, you can't go to the gas station and pay in euros. So it would be no different than borrowing euros or borrowing some oil or wheat or any commodity. It goes by where you borrow it. Now, what happens if you wire it overseas? You get into all sorts of problems. When we learn sub so, we'll have to deal with that. When you're borrowing commodities and you want to make that up, you would
just... If I'm getting paid back in euros when I lend dollars, it's going to cost me 2% to change the money back. Can I charge that 2% to the lender?
You probably could, because that's what you're getting. You lent $100, he owes you $100. For him to pay you back $100, we'll take $101 worth of euros, because you're just doing him a service. You're doing that transfer for him. You have the right to charge him for the cost of that transfer. At best, they're like payers. It's not money. The definition of money is something that people use to buy and sell goods. If you can't go to a grocery and pay them with shares of Microsoft, it will have a din of payers and not tiva. Now, the next sugya is the sugya of Mois Yosayimim. The Gemara Bava Metzia talks about if you have Yosayimim, you have orphans who are katanim. People go around, they collect it, they put together money for their benefit. So what do you do with this money? So the Gemara Daf Ayin writes, Amar of Sheshes, Moishel Yosayimim, money that belongs to a Yosim, Mutr Lal Voislin, Karav Leschav, Rachog Lehefsid. You're allowed to lend it out, Karav Leschav, Rachog Lehefsid. You're allowed to invest it with someone, and under the following terms. If it goes down in value, this manager, the person who took the money, is responsible for the loss. He has to guarantee your investment. And if it goes up in value, then the Yosayimim and this person share the profits. Normally, this is called Karav L'Schayr and Rachog L'Hefsid. Normally, since someone has guaranteed an investment, that will be Aser. However, it's only Aser Midrabanan. Because you're not guaranteeing any interest, you're not guaranteeing any return, you're just making up that if this venture is profitable, you'll share the profits. So over here, since you guaranteed the investment, it will be Aser, it will only be Derabanan, and therefore, by Mois Yosayimim, the Gemara says that it's mutter. And the Gemara explains, so, Amalei Rabbi the Rav Yosef, Hani Zuzi Dias Mihecha Abinun Lehu. If you have money that belongs to Yosayimim, what are you supposed to do with it? Amalei Masvinu Lei Beidino, V'yavinu Lei Zuzi Zuzi. So he says, if you have money that belongs to tzedakah, you have to be very conservative. Put it in Beis Din, hold on to the money, and as you release the money to the Yosayimim as they need it. And that way, it's safe, it's secure, and nothing will happen to it. If you do that, it's very nice that it's safe and secure. But over time, you're going to use up the money. So he said back to him, so what's your etza? So Amrulei, but kinu gav redisle dava precha v'naktin and dava minei ve'avinu luhu niyalei karv l'schag v'rachel lehefse. So the Gemara says, what you do is, in order to secure the money, and in order to make sure that the Mois Yosayim doesn't get used up doesn't get eaten, we find someone who is trustworthy, we actually take collateral from him, we allow him to invest it, and he guarantees the investment. By a regular person, this will be aser, but by Mois Yosayim, their chazal were makel. In order to protect and to protect their assets, protect the keren, there the halacha is we were not goyzer and they're allowed to be malva beribes derabanan. Now this is actually fairly common. You have very often when people will start an investment, they'll start a fund. They'll have very often they will want a moysid. They'll want a moysid to invest with them, and partially as a chesed, partially because they want the schus and they want the venture to succeed. It's not uncommon for a person to approach a moysid and say, listen, I'm starting this investment. I want you to give me a certain amount of money. I will guarantee you won't lose it. If the business goes bad, I will make up the loss. And if it does well, you'll be a partner, you'll be a shutif, whatever percentage it is, you will benefit from it. So this arrangement by a private person would be awesome. It is karev l'schar and rachel l'hefsid. But by Mois Yosayimim, if you're dealing with a Moisid, the Mechaber extends it to Talmud Torah or any tzedakah. So in such a case, Chazal were Mekel and it would be Mutter. Now this halacha is brought down by Yosayimim. Yesaimim, the Rama explains, they have to be ketanim. It's only orphans that are ketanim. Now, ketanim over here does not mean he's under 13. It means he is too young to care to manage his own affairs. Someone who Bezdin is responsible to take care of, and in such cases, it's Ribbis Rabbanon is going to be mutter. By an almana, this halacha will not apply, because an almana is considered capable of managing her own affairs, and therefore there's no hetzer, and the regular isurim and halachos of Ribbis will apply. There is a tshuva from the Beis David, Simon Pei Dalet, which is a chiddush. But he's mashma that if the widow, if the almana, has young children, so then he said once it's mutter for the yisayimim, it seems to be mutter for the whole keren. I mean, it's a chiddush. I don't know if it's lahalacha. But certainly, if you do have a keren, if you have a fund that was set up for a family where the husband passed away, certainly the amount of money that's going to be used for the yisayimim ketanim, that certainly is mutter. So if they want to take a portion of it and give it out with ribbis d'rabbanon, and that certainly would be mutter, and you can use that money for the ketanim, for the assignment. The money that the almana will use, that l'chachilut should not be done with any yisur of ribbis.
What
does Karim the almana take care of? It's yisayimim who are ketanim. They're a 9-year-old yasim, Nebuch, has no way to take care of themselves. And almana, although back then especially ladies were less involved in business, but they're not. She's not quite as helpless, and we don't have such a gezeirah or such an exception to the rule. Right. No. But his point is that even though they may be less capable than men, and certainly they were less ruggle back then to be involved in business, they are a lot more capable than ketanim, and they're not helpless enough to have such a gezeirah or takana made for them. Now the Mishnah Melech adds that the same halach would apply to a shaita or a cherish as well. Someone who is a shaita cannot take care of themselves. Bezdin is responsible for their well-being, and therefore this heter would apply. And there is a case halach l'maisa. There's a bank in the tri-state area that was founded by someone by a yid who was not from, and it was an issue for many years with the heteriska. They didn't want to write a heteriska. Ultimately, the founder of the bank passed away. And he left the entire bank in a trust for the benefit of his son, who was mentally retarded. I don't know exactly what the diagnosis was, but he was a shaita. So it would come out, since this money is now mois, I don't think he's a yasim, but at least mois of a shaita. So at least al kol panim by ribbis d'rabbanon, it would be mutter to use such a bank, because it's owned by it for the benefit of a shaita, and therefore. And therefore, Chazal would never goyzer, and at least by Ribbis Rabbanon it would be mutter. Now, the Mechaber adds that this is not only by Mois Yisayimim, by any tzedakah for Talmud Torah, any moysid that wants to lend money with Ribbis Rabbanon, it would be mutter. Now, the Mishnah Melech deals with an interesting case. A person was Malve Beribbis, Issud Rabbanon. He didn't know the halacha. He didn't care, and he was ma'al v'karv l'schai rachul lehafsid. Vayihi hayoyim. One day he dies. So a year or two later, the apotropos, the person who was managing the estate, calls him up and says, "I want to collect all the interest that you owe me." The loyvo, the bar, responded, "What do you mean? We're both from Yidden. It's ribbis d'rabbanon. I don't have to pay you." The apotropos said back, "Nothing doing. If the Malva would have been alive and he wants to collect the Ribbis d'Rabbanon, you're right. He has no right to collect it. But the Malva died. And today, I'm here calling on behalf of the Yisayimim. The Yisayimim have no issue of Ribbis d'Rabbanon. And therefore, I want you to pay up." So here the Paiskim say that it's a nice try, but nothing doing. Since the deal was done by Isser, certainly, whatever ribbis accrued while the father was still alive, you will not be able to collect, even though today it's for the Yisayimim's benefit. But the bottom line is, you can't diarshin money that was be'isr, or certainly not a debt. And therefore, he certainly cannot collect the money that the ribbis d'rabbanon that accrued until the father died. The money that accrued afterwards, here it's a bit more of a shayla. Because the halacha is, there's an interesting halacha that what happens if a moysid or someone who's running money the fund for Yisoyimim lends money with Ribbis Doraisa. Straight Halvaba Ribbis. So over here, according to the Halacha and according to most Paiskim, Ribbis Doraisa is no heter for. It's only a Halacha, a special Kula in Ribbis Doraban. However, the Mechaber Paskins, that if the Apotropos lends money with Ribbis Doraisa, we say that that deal is off. You have no right to collect the Ribbis Doraisa. But what we say is that since the halacha is they're allowed to lend Karev L'Schar and Rachel Glehefsid, we say we're going to throw out the deal, the Ribbis Doraisa deal. But we're going to say it's Ke'ilu, they made it because Bezdin allows you to do Karev L'Schar and Rachel Glehefsid. We say it's as if they made up this condition, Karev L'Schar and Rachel Glehefsid. And therefore, even though you don't have to pay the Ribbis, if you took the money and you invested it and you earned a profit, you have to share that profit with the assignment. Because it's as if the apotropos made the tanai that's mutter, he made a tanai of karav l'schar and rachak lehefsid. So it's not. First of all, normally, karav l'schar and rachak lehefsid is us. It's true. But if I make a deal with you, ribbis d'oraisa, and it's batel, so the deal's off. The deal's off, then it's a regular halva, and you don't owe me any interest, and if I collect it, I have to pay you back. Over here, it's different, because over here, the default is, Chazal said, when you deal with Yisayimim, it's Karev L'Schar and Rachak L'Hefsid. So in such a case, even though the deal that was done is batel, because it was Be'isr, but we still say that the Gezeru, or the Halacha, that the default, when you deal with Yisayimim, it's Karev L'Schar and Rachak L'Hefsid, that's there because of the Tanai Bezdin. And that's why it still applies. By a regular person, there's no Tanai Bezdin of Karev L'Schar and Rachak L'Hefsid.
So even if you had no intent whatsoever to do anything to them, Bezdin automatically makes the Tanai that by you borrowing that money, you're automatically...
Correct. Now, the case that it's discussed in the Shulchan Aruch is, you borrowed money, you agree to pay Ribbis Ketutza. You can't pay because it's batel. But we say, nevertheless, it's like you made up Karev L'Schar and Rachak L'Hefsid. If we change around the case, you go over to a Moisid offers you an interest-free loan. You take the money, and then when it comes time to pay back, the Moisid said, listen, there's a halacha that we're allowed to lend the money in Karev L'Schar and Rachak L'Hefsid. And there's another halacha that it's like Bezdin made it tonight. So every time you borrow an interest-free loan from the Moisid, they should be able to hit you afterwards with a bill and say, if your deal did well, you have to share the profits. So here most Achrayim say that that's not true. It's only when you took the money and you agreed to pay some sort of return, so even though your agreement was be'isser, because you agreed to pay Ribbis Ketutza, so there we'll say, we'll throw out the isser, we'll make it beheter, we'll make it Karev L'Schar Rachak L'Hefsid. But in a case where you took the money and you had no intention of giving them anything in exchange, it was done as an interest-free loan, there we will not say it's kilu, there's a tanai, we can't force you to pay profits that you no intention of paying, and there this would not apply. That deal is batel because it's ribbis. But hey, yois the bezin, you don't really need the bezin; it's batel anyway. But if you need, but you can say bezin is mavatel, and bezin instead makes this tonight l'tzayvas the assignment. Correct. Over here, it's because Bezdin is involved. Bezdin is the Avi Yisayim, and Bezdin says we're going to throw out that Heskin Be'isser, and we're going to make a Tanai Beheter. It is a cool that's done. What? Correct. It's only done because of Bezdin. A private person, this certainly would not apply. So while in a chanaim in halacha in the heter for a yosim is only by ribbis d'rabbanon, if he lends with ribbis d'oraisa, it'll come out that if he did well, if he profited off this money, he will end up having to pay not because of ribbis d'oraisa, he'll have to pay because it's like they made this other deal, and he will end up paying it. Now there is a shitas harajba, which is it's the halacha, we do not follow it, but it's kedai to know. The Rajba suggests that even by Ribbis D'oraisa, it is mutter with Mois Aniyim. And what he says is, there are different reasons that are brought down. What he essentially says is that, as we've discussed many times, Ribbis is Meloi V'Lamalva. the borrower pays the lender interest. If a person is a gabbai tzedakah, he has a few dollars sitting around, he lends it to someone with interest. He collects the interest. Who exactly is the malva, and who exactly is getting earning this interest on the money? The Rashba says, when you have mois aniyim, it's a communal, it's not, there are no bailim yaduim, there are no specific owners. And since there are no specific owners, there's no one whose principal belongs to, and there's no one specific who is benefiting from this interest, the Rashba suggests that perhaps even ribbis d'oraisa would be mutter. There are those that compare this to a government. If you lend money to a government, who owes you the money back? No one in particular. And since it's no one in particular, there are some that say, based on this Rashba, there's a tzad lahakel. Now, halacha l'maisa, the Rashba himself says not to be soimich on this. It's halacha l'maisa. Many, there are other rishonim that argue straight out, so certainly one cannot be soimich on it l'halacha. But if a person borrows money from Moyes Aniyim and he pays back ribbis, after he's paid it back, he will not be able to recover it because they can always say, Kimli, they can always say, I'm being Semich on the Shishtas Raj, but they don't have to pay it back. Now, an additional argument is that even if we hold that it's ribbis d'oraisa, once you paid it to the Aniyim, who exactly are you going to recover this interest from? Normally, if you pay someone ribbis, the malva, the person who took the ribbis, has to pay it back. Over here, you pay the interest to this fund, and it was distributed to the ani. So what are you going to do? You're going to go now after every ani who got a check, who got some money from this organization, and say, you got my ribbis? Each of them is going to tell you, go to the next person. LMI, the next person, the next time a donation comes in, you're going to say, this organization took interest from me, they owe it back to me. This person who donated money is donating money for aniyim that are out there. He's not donating money to pay back a chayv of interest that people may have. So therefore, the Rivash points out that there's no one to recover the money from. Now again, certainly l'chatchila we're not tzaymech by ribbis d'oraisa, but b'di'eved, if you've already paid a moysid, besides the fact that practically speaking, there's not much of a chance you'll see the money back. But in halacha as well, they have a kimli like the Rashba, and you also have problems of who would owe the money, and therefore you would not be able to recover even ribbis d'oraisa. So this Rashba is used for as a tzad l'hakol. The Israeli government does have a heteriska, which is, I think, what people are samech on. And no one's, I don't think anyone's going to be samech rachil on the Raj, because the Raj himself says not to be samech on. The Rajba says, svara is that it's not, because there are no bailim yaduim, there are no set owners. This is money in a pot that's earmarked to go to aniyim. There's no one in particular, there's no real owner here. So therefore he says there's no is, it's not loy v'lamav, and there's no is eribis. Okay, that's a good question. It's not for now, but it's Mamon Hatzibur, which the tshuvos that discuss this bring up how to deal with the city and what the status is. The way cities were structured in the times of the Gemara and you know in Ramapo or Muncie, I don't think are the same. But it's a discussion for another time. Somewhat. Rav Meisher is really talking about it. The definition of a loan is when a person has to pay it back. The Rashba is in the opposite case. He's talking about the lender. And he's saying the lender, there's no person who's receiving the interest because it's not earmarked to anybody. The Rashba, but if you have a corporation that you own, the Rashba is not going to say that it's mutter. Because clearly you're benefiting from it. You're the malva, regardless of the fact there's this legal entity in between. The Rashba's case is only when it's mamon aniyim, which is just this vague, you know, it's not owned specifically, there's no defined person, right? That most corporations have very defined people behind it. So it's really very... Right, Rav Meisher's point is that it's not called a loan when there's no Shibat HaGuf. He's going on the lending, on the borrowing end. The Rashba is the opposite svara, that if the lending, if there is no lender because there's no specific person getting the money, it just can go to any ani, there's no person who's a lender. But if there is a corporation with shareholders, even though it's a corporation, bankruptcy, everything like that, Rashba would clearly say that that's also. So there is the Mordechai in the Sefer Truma sound like the apotropos. The one who's in charge of it is the one that's over the Yisr. He actually says he has a responsibility to pay back the interest, and then he can go after the Meisid and try to recover it. But it's a good point. That is part of the discussion. There's a related case. There's a Birkei Yosef in Simon Kuf Samaches, Sif Yud Zayin, that has, again, he doesn't say this lahalacha, but he says that the killers in Eretz Yisrael very often needed money. So they would borrow money beribis from a guy. So he says, he has a discussion, well, it's a problem, yes, no. Then he wants to say, perhaps there even a kahila is even allowed to borrow money and pay ribis to a Jew. Why? Because when a person lends the kahila of Yerushalayim money, who's paying back that loan? Zakir Birkei Yosef, no one in Yerushalayim. What happened? They send people all over Chutz Laretz, and they raised money for the kill of Yerushalayim. That means the person's lending the money, he knows that the borrower, if you will, the person who's receiving the money is not paying it back. It's coming from other people. So the other people, the in Chutz Laretz, they're not paying interest. There's no loan. They don't have any chiyuv. So he says, perhaps it's not loy v'lamalvo. Since you have other people who are paying it back, they have no real obligation. You just know they're going to do chesed. He suggests perhaps there'll be no isribis. Right, so he says it's ki'ilu, he says because the people in America know that the killer in Yerushalayim has cash flow problems, they know that they borrowed money beribis, they're okay with just giving the money to pay back that lender. Yeah, it's his chiddush, he doesn't say... What? That's what he says. He says it, he does not say this halachah l'maaseh, he says it b'teres efsher, just bring it down because it's related to this to this Rashba. Excuse me? It depends on the gemach. I mean, the gemach where you can withdraw the money, it certainly isn't. Gemach where it's locked in, it very likely is. It's earmarked to give tztaka, not permanent tztaka, but tztaka is constant loans that will be regenerated, you know, time and time again. Right. Okay. We're gonna have to taxes where you're paying more over time is there are other factors that will come in. We'll have to deal with it in the future share. So to go over again, by ribis d'rabbanon for mois yisaimim is mutter. By ribis d'oraisa it's going to be aser after the fact because there's a rashba, because there are other cheshbonos, you may not be able to recover it, but certainly lechatchila it would be aser. Now this whole discussion is very nice. And perhaps in the perfect world, this is the way it used to be, where all the meisters and all the funds and the karens that they set up for Yosemim had globs of cash sitting around, and they had to figure out how to invest it, how to protect it. The reality today is that most meisters, when they have shilos about hilchos ribis, are not talking about whether they can charge interest on their money. They are trying to borrow money, and the question is whether they can pay interest. So is there any heter for a moisid to actually pay interest on their money? Now clearly if it's ribis d'oraisa, there will be no heter. If the moisid borrows, but there's no one who's personally responsible for it, then we have the igros moish that we discussed a number of times, that a corporation where there's no personal liability can borrow beribis, which actually even ribis d'oraisa. So a moisid that follows Rav Moshe certainly does not have a problem. As long as the owner is not, and no one is guaranteeing the debt, according to the Gros Moshe, it would be fine. Excuse me? Correct. The lender, if you want to lend a Moshe and charge them interest, you can do it. If you follow Rav Moshe, it's not a problem. I recently had a case where a foundation lent a Moshe money with the ribis ketutza. So when the Moshe realized it, they called them up. Now, of course, the first year was interest free, and then the ribis kicked in. So the first year when they took the money, they didn't say anything. They signed the contract, no problem. But a year later, they decided to become front. And he called up, how you talking? We're going to be standing behind the Ebrus Moshe. This is such a chosh of a yid. How can you do that? So there was a back and forth, and the foundation said, listen, I'm signing with Moshe. If you don't like it, give me back the money. Okay. Very nice. Now the problem is that when you lend money to a Moshe, it's very hard to get it back. So the lender had been busy sending all these nasty emails to the borrower, to the person who ran the Moshe, who solicited him, that I hold you personally responsible for the money, and because he was a wealthy fellow. I'm going to go after you, and you gave me your word, and you have to do what it takes. I want the money back. So you can't cut it both ways. The moment the deal is structured where the person who ran the Moshe is personally responsible for this money, you can't be Samech on the Moshe anymore. Because the money may have gone to a corporation or to a Moshe, but it was a personal loan with personal achrayas, and it would be usher. So going back, so is there any heter for a moysid to borrow money with ribbis rabbanu? So the case that we have over here in Simkuf Samach is all talking about when moysid is charging the interest, and it's there to protect the moysid. It's there to protect their capital. We are allowing you to charge ribbis rabbanu because that way you won't lose your money. Clearly, there's no reason for Bezdin to be makel and allow them to pay interest. That's not a way to safeguard their capital. L'mayis, there is a tzad heter. There's a Yerushalmi that says that love and beribis for Suda Shabbos and a Suda's mitzvah. That a person can borrow money, he can pay interest for a Suda Shabbos or a Kiddush HaChodesh for a Suda's mitzvah. Now, this Yerushalmi seems to say that as long as you're using the money for a Devar mitzvah, there's nothing wrong with borrowing and paying interest. Now, the Mishnah Berurah in Siman Reish Mem Beis brings down, and the Prima Gadim and many other Achronim say, that when it means love and beribis, the context of the Yerushalmi is, a person's not supposed to spend too much on his on food, on things that he needs. Because Mizaynos HaShalom Gatsuvim Rosh Hashanah Va'Rosh Hashanah, person on Rosh Hashanah, it's nigzar how much money he'll have. So you shouldn't spend so much in the beginning of the year because you may hit your quota, you may run out of money. That's true when you're spending money on yourself. For a Dvar Mitzvah, for Talmud Torah, for a Tzoy Shabbos V'Nyantiv, there we say, Levu Alai V'Ani Pareya, the more you spend, the Rebbe Shalom will make up the Chesaron. So in that, we're saying that if a person doesn't have money to cover Shabbos, he's allowed to borrow money Beribis, so Mr. Brewer Paskin, that means you can borrow from a goy and pay him interest. If you're doing it for yourself, you shouldn't be paying interest unless you know you can afford it. But when it comes to Suda Shabbos, when it comes for Itzol Shabbos Yontiv, there you have the right to borrow money from a goy beribis, or with a heteriska. But where it's an Isur D'Rabbanon, the Mishnah Berurah says, as Dabar Pasha, there's no heter whatsoever. Dvar Mitzvah is not a reason to be over in Isur D'Rabbanon. Mitzad Sheni, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, and some others, saying in the Goyin is Mashma, not like that. Shulchan Aruch HaRav is Mekel. He says, whenever you have a Dvar Mitzvah, and if you don't borrow money beribis, you will not be able to do the Mitzvah. He says it is mutter to borrow beribis to Rabbanon, Chazal, we're not Goyzer. Now, certainly the Halacha, the hard to be Mekel, connected to Mishnah Berurah, he says that it's Aser. Also, even the Shulchan Aruch HaRav is talking about only when the mitzvah can only get done if you're borrowing money and paying ribbis. If it's a question of a moysid, it's convenient, it's more geschmack, it's just helpful, but it's not actually absolutely critical, then clearly, even according to the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, this would be aser. Now, we had just an interesting case that illustrates some of these halachas, is that there was a person who was soliciting investments. And he made a deal with a moysid, it was actually a very large sum of money, that give me $1 million for this investment, I will guarantee the principal, and the profits will split. Now this is a classic case of Karav V'Schar and Rachuk L'Hefzid, where although by a private person would be awesome, if you're dealing with a moysid, if you're dealing with mois tzedakah, there we said before, Ribbis D'Rabbanon is going to be mutter. But he guaranteed the investment. Once he guaranteed the investment, if it goes down, he will take the money out of his pocket. That is part of the schar and rachuk lehefzid. And that would be awesome, Midr Rabban. Excuse me? We'll never know. I mean, hopefully. So this itself sounds fine. The problem is like this. The problem is that where is a what kind of moises have that kind of money sitting around to invest? So what happened is that the moises had gone to one of their supporters and said, listen, we have this great opportunity. Oh, we have this one little technical problem, and that is we need $1 million. But it's guaranteed, it'll be income for the moised. So they got an outside person to put out the money, up the money. Now, the problem is this person that put out the money said, listen, if you're telling me you need a loan because you need a loan because you have operating expenses, no problem, I'll lend you the money, I'll make a donation, we can talk. But if you're doing it as an investment, then I want a cut. And if the moised is getting his profits, I want a chiduk of it. I'm tying up my money. Now, what happens now? Although if a moised has money and they want to lend beribis derabbanan, that's motzer. Over here, now it turns out the moised is really not doing the lending. You have this other person, this nonsman, is investing money with this third party, funneling it through the moised, and here it's karv l'schar rachel l'hafsid. It's karv l'schar and rachel l'hafsid. Since it's no longer a moised, it should be awesome.
It's not rachel l'hafsid, but the moised guarantees it. The moised isn't guaranteed.
The original investor goes under, the moised is not guaranteed. No, the person who was taking the money was guaranteeing it to the moised or to...
But the person that's lending the money to the moised.
It certainly wasn't. The moised... Yeah.
Then he's not Rachel l'hafsid. You only have the guarantee of the...
That guarantee is good enough. Every guarantee is a credit risk. It's called rochek lehefzid. It's not called impossible because nothing is impossible. If the person who guarantees it goes under, you'll never recover. Now over here, so we just switched it around, and now we have a problem because now it's not Moise Simon. So what happened? So this was a prominent Moise. This has been going on for many years. So they were scrambling because now they had to call. They were in a position where they had to call up their nazvin and tell them, "Listen, we're very sorry. We took $1 million from you 15 years ago. We promised you the profits, but it's aser." It's Ribbis Rabbanon. We can't give it back to you. So as you can imagine, there was a lot of scrambling going on. So what they came up with was this Shulchan Aruch Harav. It's true, you don't have the Heter of Moise to sign. But this whole deal was being done for a Dvar Mitzvah. It was being done to raise money for this Moisid. So although by Ribbis D'Oraisa it would certainly be Aser, since it wasn't D'Oraisa, it was only Karev L'Schai Aruch L'Hafsid. Since it was for a Dvar Mitzvah, it was in order to raise capital for the Moisid, so the Moisid felt that it was okay to be Saimach Kula on the Shulchan Aruch Harav after the fact. Now, it's a Chiddush, and we're just saying over a story. Now, the Moisid, what happened at the end, it wasn't a very Geshmaga Heter, but what happened at the end is, once the Nadzim got involved, so it really goes to the next question. How many people who support Moises are ready to just plop down $1 million indefinitely because it's for the Moises to benefit? What turned out was that the money came from a foundation that was controlled by the Nazim. Once it's in the foundation, that means this is anyway Mois Tzedakah, which was being lent to another Moised. Since it was a foundation money, since it was Mois Tzedakah, you're backed. If it's Ribbis D'Rabbanan, it would be Mutter. The issue is just which Tzedakah will get it. And in that case, by Ribbis D'Rabbanan, there certainly it would be Mutter L'Chatchila. Okay, just want to briefly end off. I know we're a little bit over time. I just would like to finish Simon Kuf Samach this week because next week we're in Mitzvah Shem going to switch topics. We're going to talk about Gevias Chayv, collecting debt. So just one brief halacha of another minute or two. And that is that many of the shayos that come up in Hilchos Ribbis come up after the fact. Person borrowed the money, he borrowed someone's credit card, he used someone else's line of credit, and after the fact they've been making payments for years, they realize now they have a problem. So is there any way to fix, how do you deal with Ribbis after it was paid? So we've mentioned many times that Ribbis D'Oraisa V'Halacha is a D'Oraisa B'Dayanim. If you've collected interest, you have an obligation to return all of the money. Nevertheless, the halacha is, it's machlokes rishonim, but we paskin. If the loyva wants to be moichol the malva and say, I know you owe me the interest, I know al pi halacha, I'm entitled to it back, but I want you to keep it, I'm moichol it. There the halacha is, mechila will work according to halacha. Now you have to be careful, and the rishonim point out, every ribbis is really mechila. The borrower voluntarily pays the interest. So the halacha is, if you owe someone money, you tell them, listen, I owe you the money, and here's ribis, I'm being moichel you. That's clearly also. But if you've already been over the isser, you've paid back the karen, you've paid back the ribis, and now it's a question that the malva has to return it, so there we hold mechila will help. The same way someone robs a bank, the bank could be moichel him and say, you're a goslin, but keep the money. So in hilchos ribis as well, after it was already been paid, then the borrower has no obligation, but he has the right to be moichel it and say, keep it. They still have to do tshuva, the isser was done, but you have the mechila will work. In most cases, it would not be a loan, but it would probably be karev l'schar and rachak l'hefsed, because the game is stacked in favor of the investor. There will be some cases where it's mutter, but in most cases, it still will be asim d'rabbanan. But al kavadim, so whenever you're dealing with the case of ribis, if the loan is still outstanding, there's no etzah. You have to pay up the loan. You cannot pay back the ribis. But if it's after the fact, the isser was already done, then mechila will help on the mamonis.
In order to restructure prior to the
restructure, it's tricky. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Okay, next week in Mitzvah Hashem, we're going to start the sugya of Gvias Chayiv. It will be a CLE.
It will be CLE for next week, I hope.
Okay, thank you.
Probably the next 2 weeks, right?